Benjamin Grosvenor, welcome to Madison.
Thanks.
First visit to Wisconsin?
It is, yeah.
First visit to Madison, then.
Indeed.
And first performance with John Demain?
Yep, that's right.
How's it going?
It's great. We had the first rehearsal yesterday, and I mean, it's amazing his tenure here and everything that he's done in the many years that he's been here. And it's, you know, it was so quick and easy working with him and the orchestra, because obviously his relationship with them is so developed, and he's such a experienced pro, and it was very easy music making in the first rehearsal.
So when you take on the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto, which you must have played many times, how do you decide when you're talking to Maestro Demain or any other conductor, how do you see this and how do you see it and work it out, or what has that experience been?
It's quite different with every conductor that you work with. In every piece, there are a few moments that are notoriously difficult for ensemble, and sort of they're the ones you address first. In this Beethoven concerto, in the last movement, there are two little cadenzas where it's quite difficult for the conductor to place the top note, my top note with the orchestra. So I normally find that's what's discussed first when it comes to a conductor meeting with this piece. But otherwise, I mean, a little bit of time in this bar and talking about tempi and so on. But then, you know, sometimes you a lot of things you just work out as you play in the rehearsal, or just by listening and feeling the music together.
But you never have the freedom to just kind of get into the moment and, oh, I feel like playing this faster tonight?
I mean, you can do that. I mean, you have to be a responsible soloist, I suppose. I mean, I try to, when I play concerti, I try to not simply have my head down on the keyboard. I mean, it's an act of communication, and it's, you know, and you're sometimes playing with musicians in the orchestra who have the melody line. You might be the accompaniment, and you have to wear lots of different hats. You have to have a variety of roles. It's not just about sort of being the star at the front of the stage.
Now, this particular concerto, I know Beethoven was interested, as many composers have been over the years and still are, was interested in the latest instruments available. And of course, the keyboard, the piano, was evolving pretty quickly in those closing years of the 18th century and the early years of the 19th. Are there innovations in this concerto that we don't see in terms of use of an instrument?
Well, it's remarkable in that it's, I think, maybe the first, if not one of the first pieces to use the high G on the piano. The range of the piano had just moved one tone higher, and Beethoven was one of the first to write a piece using it, and he uses it within the sort of first few bars of the soloist's entrance.
And those cadenzas, those shows of skill, your chance to really show off on your own to a great extent, provided in this case by Beethoven or someone else in this concerto?
So the provided by Beethoven in this concerto, I mean, in the last movement there's a few little joining passages, but there's quite a substantial first movement cadenza, and it really fills such an integral part of the piece. It's a marvelous piece of bit of writing, intensely dramatic, and it feels like an integral part of the movement. And there are a lot of other interesting cadenzas written by other composers which I've been tempted by, but until now it's been hard to depart from the Beethoven, because it's just feels like part of the music to me.
You've recorded both of the Chopin piano concertos. Chopin was such a pianist, so much into the world of the piano, that sometimes it's said that, well, his orchestrations are almost more like accompaniments for the pianist. How do you feel about those concertos of Chopin's?
I mean, I think maybe not as fulfilling for orchestras to play as Beethoven concertos. I mean, there is an element of that, but it's not that he didn't know what he was doing. You have to, in the tutti's and in the first movements, for example, the orchestra has an extended tutti at the beginning, and you have to work quite hard to really make it sound good. But with the right conductor, is no problem. But the rest of the piece, there is an element of the orchestra being there as a kind of a sort of background halo for the soloist, because Chopin, his voice was so much the piano, and through his whole career his voice was the piano, and he knew how to write to that, for that instrument, better than anyone. And the orchestra is there to give a kind of support to that.
In the third movement of that second piano concerto, the finale, what's going on?
It's a dance. It's a element of a waltz and a mazurka in the central section as well. It's quite different to the finale of the first concerto, which is very exuberant. And this one is virtuosic, but it's a kind of suave, elegant virtuosity. I've done some masterclasses, which I found very fulfilling. I've never done any private teaching. With masterclasses, I most enjoy interacting with the students, and I least enjoy the fact that there's an audience there. So I think Private teaching will suit me quite well. I just haven't got around to it yet.
What do you do to keep your technique up, let's say, just in general? It's one thing to prepare a particular piece, but in terms of just your overall technique, do you do scales?
I don't do scales, no. To be honest, I don't really do any exercises at all. I play a wide variety of repertoire, and I find that the pieces that I play provide the challenges that I need. I mean, when I was younger, of course, I did that. I did scales. I did Hannon and Czerny and various kinds of things, Chopin etudes. But at this point, I find the repertoire that I play sustains my physical abilities.
How many pieces do you suppose you have in your fingers at any given moment?
Well, that's tricky to say. I mean, what can I play confidently and well? I know that I'd be able to play confidently and well. Probably at any one time I've got a recital program in my fingers, about an hour and a half of solo piano music. And then concerti, well, you know, there are lots which are sort of familiar things that are there in the mind, you know, as to what I could just sit down and play for you now and feel confident about, then it's probably going to be pieces I played in the last few months or so. I actually been quite a busy month for concerti, so there's about four concerti I could probably sit down and play for you alongside of a Zydeco again right now.
And how is your season shaping up? Where did you play before coming to Madison, and where are you going after this?
Good question. So before Madison, yeah, I was in the UK. I had some concerts with the Philharmonia in London and then with the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic in Liverpool with Chopin 2 and Rachmaninoff 2nd. And then after this, I'm going next week to San Diego to do the Beethoven again with the orchestra there.
Does it ever sort of require you to take a deep breath and think about where I am and what I'm playing after all that globetrotting?
Well, you always have to think about what's coming next. I mean, I'm here at the moment doing Beethoven 3. I've got some recitals coming up, so in my spare time I'm practicing that stuff as well. So, yeah, you have to sort of have the next few months in your mind all the time to make sure you're really prepared for everything.
You're playing concertizing all around the world. Do you see any difference in audiences from one country to the next?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I love coming to the States. I find the audiences here very enthusiastic, and I'm not afraid to show that enthusiasm. You know, by contrast, maybe audiences in Britain can be a little too polite. and so, you know, and then, you know, if you go to South America, they're also incredibly enthusiastic when they really show when they enjoy something. And then, but, you know, it varies. And, you know, there's also attentiveness when you're playing and, you know, the quality of listening. And that you can't really generalize with that. I mean, sometimes you, it doesn't depend on the country that you're in.
What are you discovering lately in terms of repertory?
Well, right now I'm finishing off the Schumann Fantasy for some recital programs. So that's a piece that I've loved since I was very young. So that's something that I'm really enjoying right now.
He was described as having condensed the whole orchestra into the two hands of the pianist. Do you feel that way about Schumann?
Yes, I mean, his music is just teeming with detail and counterpoint. And yeah, I completely agree with that that quote.
Do you still play the cello?
I don't. I regret it, I must say. I think I gave up the cello when I was 11, having started at 8. And I wasn't bad, but just the piano was what I, you know, it was clear that the piano was my instrument, and that's what I decided to focus on.
It's intriguing how musicality of a person, in some cases, can translate from a string instrument to the piano to a wind instrument. Some people, for example, Hindemith was an example. It could apparently play almost any instrument. And others, it's just sort of one instrument that they seem to have all the talent for.
Well, I think my frustration with the cello was simply only being able to play basically one line. It was just when you play the piano and you're able to be immersed in the whole fabric of the music, and then you go to a single line instrument, I didn't find it quite as fulfilling, even though I loved the sound of the cello. I mean, it's funny because I don't remember why I chose to play the piano. I mean, my mum's a piano teacher, but, you know, my other brothers didn't choose the piano. They played other things. And so I don't remember that, but I remember why I chose to play the cello, because I heard Jacqueline Dupre playing the Elgar Concerto, and I said, oh, God, that's amazing sound. And that's why I started the cello, but then the piano was the one that sort of took over.
Idols as a pianist?
Oh, very many. It would be a long list. I mean, I've always listened very widely and to a lot of historical recordings. So, you know, the pianists I admire stretch back to the earliest recordings made. And, you know, it's a long list, obviously, Horowitz and Rubinstein, Tchaikovsky, George Bollett. I don't know, you know, Alfred Cortot. There's so many. There's been so many interesting personalities at this instrument, and they all brought something unique to it.
Do you ever feel especially when you're seeing another pianist performing live, do you ever feel kind of overwhelmed, like, oh, why don't I just give up, because I can never be that good? I mean, we hear in history, you know, some instances of that. Is it sometimes just overwhelming?
I don't remember ever feeling like that. even when I was a child. I don't think I felt like, I don't think I felt that way even when I was a child listening to pianists I admire, like, you know, Evgeny Kissin at a festival hall in London, and I just thought, oh yeah, I'd really like to play that piece too.
A lot of instrumentalists would envy you that ability.
Yes, I mean, it's perhaps more, sometimes more awe-inspiring seeing another instrumentalist playing an instrument that you don't play and thinking, God, how do they do that? Because you don't know so much about it, so you don't know what the secrets are in the same way.
Do you match, when you're on the concert circuit, do you match the repertory with the place at all? In other words, if you're in England, do you tend to play more English composers? If you're in Spain, more Spanish composers, that kind of thing?
I've never really thought about doing it in that way. No. Sometimes, I mean, I don't play a lot of British music, but one piece I like in particular is Benjamin Britten's Piano Concerto, which I've done quite a lot over the years. And, you know, as a British person, I get asked to play it, so I probably played it more than most. I suppose sometimes you get asked to do repertoire that from the country that you're from, but generally, no, when I devise a recital program, very often I have it with me for a season, so I'll take that to many different places. So I don't usually plan with one country in mind.
Well, let's wrap it up with one little piece that, speaking of countries, comes from Spain.
Yeah.
And Isaac Albéniz, who wrote for the piano, but possibly even more than the piano, you hear his work transcribed for guitar, because so reminiscent of guitar playing in the first place. But tell us about the tango that you recorded some time ago.
The tango is a beautiful piece, but its arrangement is by Leopold Godowsky. And he was renowned for taking works and then sort of putting in as many other lines that he could think of. So it becomes quite a, although it's so intimate, quite a densely written transcription, but filled with like wonderful little genius bits of counterpoint and voice leading and harmonic inflection.
It's been a pleasure, Benjamin Grosvenor.
Thanks very much.